welcome back to Success Made to Last. I'm Rick Tocchini. This is our Country Music Legends series. Our very special guest today is T. Graham Brown. It was one of the most vibrant and exciting time periods in country music history, the mid-1980s, and a new and exciting crop of talent was springing up all over the place. T. Graham Brown remembers it just like yesterday. He says, "I remember Randy Travis and I hit at the same time. Our very first singles were so close to each other, I'm not sure if it was the same week or not. And then came Marty Stewart and Billy Burnett, who went on to Fleetwood Mac. It was just an absolutely great time for country western music. And that kind of music today remains in our hearts and in our souls." He sings the song, "I Tell It Like It Used to Be," and it remains one of our singular favorite songs of all time. T. Graham Brown, welcome to Success Made to Last.
Hey, Rick. How you doing, man?
Well, it's an honor to have you on our country series.
Oh, thank you, man. Glad to do it.
T, tell us about your hometown and how you got into the music industry.
Golly, man. That's kind of a long story, but I'll try to make it short. Both sides of my family are in the agriculture business. They're all farmers, and I'm from right outside of Athens, Georgia, in northeast Georgia. We got a farm that's been in our family for seven generations. And so it's at Route 4 Commerce, Georgia, which is about 20 miles from Athens. And my daddy went to the University of Georgia, and then he moved us all down to South Georgia, and he built a grain elevator down there. So I spent my boyhood years in a little 300 population town called Araby, Georgia. And then when I was in the 10th grade, we moved back to Athens, and I finished high school in Athens and went to the University of Georgia. And all this time I've been playing baseball, so I went to Georgia to play baseball, and I never got to play. I was sitting on the bench, and I never had sat on a bench in my life. And when I was in high school in Athens, I had this buddy that had a guitar, and we would get up at parties, you know, those kind of parties where somebody's mom and daddy would go out of town, and all the kids would come over to their house and have a big party and then clean the house up so their folks didn't know there was a party, you know, that kind of deal. And so my friend and I would sing a few songs. We didn't know what we were doing. We were just entertaining our friends. And so a buddy of mine from high school went to work at the Holiday Inn, working at the front desk. And he said, "You know, there's a bar upstairs and nobody, it's not even open. Nobody's ever up there. And maybe the manager of the motel or hotel, whatever you want to call it, would let you audition." And we didn't know what audition was. And so we went over and we were having fall baseball practice, I remember. And I went over one afternoon and sang for this man at the Holiday Inn, and he said, "I'll hire you." And we didn't know nothing about nothing. And we sang, I don't know, probably four songs. And the guy says, "I'll pay you $150 a week if you'll come in here and sing every from Tuesday through Saturday." And we thought, man, that's great, you know. And so I went back to baseball practice that afternoon, and I told my coach, I said, "All I've ever wanted to do is play baseball, but I can't stand sitting on the bench. And I got this offer to go sing at the Holiday Inn, and I make $150 a week, and I just don't know what to do." And I asked him what he thought I should do, and he put his hand on my shoulder, and he looked at me and said, "Tony, if I was you, I would go sing." So that was the end of my baseball career and the beginning of my singing career. So we would sing at night at the Holiday Inn from 9 till midnight every night, and then get up in the morning and go to class at the University of Georgia, which was just like right across the street, the campus was. And so I sang at night and went to Georgia during the daytime. And that's how I started. And that was that was the fall of 1973. So I've been making my living singing since I was 18.
T, have you kept up with your original singing buddy?
Yeah, his name's Dirk Howell. We split up and I don't know. We did. It was called Dirk and Tony, and it was our little duo name. And we split up. I wanted to put a band together, and he wanted to stay. He wanted the money to split up better than a band, and so we just kind of went our separate ways. And I put a country band together, kind of a country rock band, and he kept doing beach music. That's what we were doing, was beach music and playing for all the kids, you know, the fraternity and sorority kids. And, we were kind of, you know, we were really popular back then, but he kept doing it. And he's down in Florida, I think, selling real estate and maybe playing at people's weddings, something like that. He's still at it.
You had a beautiful career. Tell us about the meaning behind the lyrics, "I tell it like it ought to be, 'cause how it's killing me."
Well, it's just about a guy, this girl left him, you know, and he doesn't like what's going on now. He's heartbroken, and so when people ask him about it, he tells them, you know, about the good days when he and the girl were still in love, but she drops him, so now he's telling it what he thinks like it ought to be. But he's basically losing. But, you know, I started singing demos when I moved to Nashville in 1982. I had to start all over, and I didn't know how Nashville worked. I didn't know anything about it and didn't know anybody. And we just had to kind of make it up as we went. Sheila finished up her master's work at Georgia and came home. I was living on the farm, and she came home one day and said, "Let's move to Nashville." And I wasn't brave enough to. So she insisted, because she said, "If we don't move, you'll never, you'll be second guessing yourself the rest of your life. You know, what if?" And so anyway, I went to Nashville and I finally got into the demo singing business. And that song was written by Ron Heller, Bucky Jones, and Michael Garvin. And it was one of my first official big time, what I'll call big time demo songs. It was in a major publishing company and in a good studio, and of course I got paid $20 for it, and after they took tax out, I think it was $16 and something, but that wasn't really the point. The point was to get your foot in the door. So I sang that song, and it sat on a shelf for a couple of years, and in the meantime I got more popular as a demo singer, and my voice got spread around Music Row a lot. And people got to where they would say, "Hey, that song's nice, but who's this guy singing?" Anyway, it led to a record deal with Capitol Records. So when it came time to pick songs, I said, "Well, what about I tell it like it used to be?" And it was still sitting on the shelf. So we went in and we cut it. And I got the original demo that I sang of it, and in a drawer somewhere. But anyway, we cut that song. And Capitol put that song out, and I didn't have an album deal. I had what they called a singles deal back then. I don't even know if they have them now. But so they put that song out, and it was a hit, so they called for an album. And I went down to Muscle Shoals, Alabama, and cut the rest of the album. We cut I Tell It Like It Used to Be in Nashville. And then we went down to Muscle Shoals and cut everything else, Hell and High Water, and Don't Go to Strangers, and Wish I Could Hurt. All the hits I had off the first album were cut in Muscle Shoals, other than I Tell It Like It Used to Be. So that's the story on I Tell It Like It Used to Be. I didn't write it, but I sang the demo on it. And then that's the one that a lot of people remember me by, because that was the first thing they ever heard of me doing. So that song is still really popular with, you know, my audience is getting some gray hair on it. You know, I mean, I'm 65 years old, so the ones that were around when that song first came out are, you know, they're in their late 50s or 60s.
We are your core market and really love your sound and lyrics. Would you take a few minutes to share some thoughts on your own mentors and others who influenced your musical taste?
I didn't really have any mentors, but I was fans of, I like all kinds of music. I grew that little town I grew up in South Georgia was 70 miles from Macon. So, and Otis Redding came out of Macon, and then Capricorn Studios was in Macon, where the Allman Brothers and Marshall Tucker Band and Jimmy Hall and Wet Willie and Elvin Bishop and a bunch of people recorded in Macon. So I, of course, I loved all of those, you know, because they were like hometown boys, kind of. And I love Johnny Cash and Jerry Lee Lewis and Aretha Franklin and Wilson Pickett and all that soul stuff, Percy Sledge and Merle Haggard and just, you know, a little bit of everything. And like, I've been doing interviews all day, so if I forget to say something or if I say something twice, it's because I've been talking about this stuff all day. But when I'm in the car listening to music, I generally listen to Sirius XM because I don't really like commercials, even though I used to sing jingles all the time. But I don't really like commercials. And I listen to classic rock. That's mainly what I listen to. Or I'll listen to some old school country and maybe some R&B. That's I like old stuff. I like stuff that was a hit in the 60s and 70s mainly.
And you're talking about doing interviews. We really enjoy your show, Live Wire. Tell us about some of your funniest guests.
Huh. They're all pretty funny. And I usually ask them stuff that has a funny answer, too. So I just keep it light like that. Right now, the show that's airing is Joe Bonzel and Dwayne Allen from the Oak Ridge Boys, and those guys are both funny. I don't know. I like them all, man. I like them all. I get to play people's live cuts from people's live albums, and I get to pick who I want to play. So I try to pick stuff that's, you know, that everybody, you know, something for everybody, you know. Everything I play might not be everybody's cup of tea, but hopefully somebody will like something. So I generally ask people what the first concert that they went to that had an effect on them, you know, when they were kids or young, and, you know, who their favorite live. I always ask people what's their favorite live album, you know, in their life, and where they cut their live album, or if they have more than one live album, like what's your favorite live album that you've done. And so it's all pretty much centered around questions about live music.
Sure.
But it's fun,
sure.
Man. I get to, and then generally I'll throw something in there, like something from the old school rock and roll that would have been country if it came out today. Or some of this stuff that I play, like John Fogerty, for instance, I've played before. And heck, he might even be too country for country radio now. It wasn't considered country at all. But when you listen to it, his stuff was country to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I put Bachman Turner Overdrive, like Taking Care of Business, some of that stuff. You know, I love the stuff I like was popular when I was young and in college, maybe in high school, college. And so it's not that I don't think that the 80s or 90s isn't good. It's just that a lot of that stuff I didn't grow up on.
Of course.
I think I started phasing out of country music in the mid to late 90s. And since then, I don't really know what's going on. Yeah, I know that's pitiful to say because it's been 25 years ago, but I just don't listen to the radio like I used to. And it's not that I have anything against what they're doing now. It's just, I don't even know what they're doing now because I don't listen to it. And I think people try to bait me into saying that today's country sucks or that it's not country or whatever, but I can't say because I don't really have an opinion on it. I don't know enough about it to have an opinion on it.
That's fair. That's fair.
I heard Vince put it pretty well one time. He said, "I'm not supposed to like what's going on today. This isn't my era. I'm too old for this. This is more for young people." So I don't know. It's not like, for instance, I know this sounds terrible, but I wouldn't know Blake Shelton, for instance. If Blake Shelton's song came on the radio, I wouldn't know. I know that Blake Shelton's a huge star and he's on television and all this stuff, but I couldn't name you two Blake Shelton songs. And it's not that I don't like Blake Shelton. It's just I've never heard.
Yeah, it's just not what you. Yeah, it's just not what you listen to. Your question about concerts makes me think to you about why I may be still deaf in the left ear, because I went to a Bachman Turner Overdrive concert in a rodeo arena at Texas A&M in 1976, and they basically blew the lid off the arena. It was so freaking loud. It was unbelievable. And then went to a Grand Funk Railroad concert, which I swear they still have the best drummer in the world. When you grow up in the 70s and you hear that kind of music and the Doobie Brothers and the Allman Brothers, it's like that stuff is drilled into you, into your brain, and into your heart.
Oh, I know, man. It's carved into the deepest recesses of my subconscious id.
Wow. That was pretty magnificent. I love that.
It's down in there, man.
It's down bored. In the marrows of your bone. I like that. That's cool. That's really cool.
That's it.
Well, T, let me ask you a question that has stumped a few people on our show, or at least a few like entertainers of the sort of Larry Stewart of Restless Heart. And maybe you can ponder this one. What is your favorite country song with the fewest words?
Folsom Prison Blues doesn't have too many words. Dang, I don't know. I'll tell you what's maybe the longest is El Paso, Marty Robbins. That's got about 1 million verses to it. And you know who I saw the other day? Speaking of long songs, I hung out with Don McLean. Oh, I was going to say I did a duet of all people with all Lulu Roman from Hee Haw. I grew up watching her, and it's wonderful when I get to know some of my heroes. And we sang this. She did an album. She's a good singer. And we did You Are So Beautiful. You remember that song? It doesn't.
Oh, sure.
It has about a verse and a half, and you just repeat everything. So that's about the one that I know of that doesn't have as many. Well, what did Larry Stewart say?
Yeah, Larry Stewart said Wichita Lineman.
I don't know. I don't know. That's probably got as few words as folks in prison. What do you say?
Well, this I know. After talking to Larry, I went and looked into the Jimmy Webb catalog of songs, and he truly was a master songwriter.
Jimmy Webb is one of the greatest of all time, man. And you know, and as goofy as it sounds, Wichita Lineman is one of my all-time favorite songs. Glenn Campbell was just amazing. But I love MacArthur Park. You know?
Oh, yes.
It's such a weird song, but I heard Jimmy Webb say one time that all his friends hated him after he wrote MacArthur Park because nobody knew really what it was about. And he just perplexed them so badly that he said, "Man, I made all my friends mad. They hated me after I wrote that song." I was listening to Buck Owens yesterday, and Tiger by the Tail, and I Got the Hungriest for Your Love, and I'm Waiting in Your Welfare Line. All those were like 2-minute songs. And the Beatles had a bunch of 2-minute songs. And you know who else had a bunch of 2-minute songs? Was the Ramones.
Oh, my gosh. That's right.
It's like their longest song was 2 minutes. They had some 1-minute songs. So,
T, tell us where our listening audience may be able to see you in concert in the coming months.
Well, they can go to my Facebook page, T. Graham Brown. And we did a couple of Facebook live shows that are on our Facebook page that are pretty cool. I did one with Shenandoah, and then I did one with Wade Hayes and Brian White and Ronnie McDowell and David Frizzell. We all did one. I hosted one. And then I did one of just me. And we've had, like, golly, 800,000 views on them. I mean, this, so people have found them. So go to T. Graham Brown Facebook. And I'm doing one for the Navy tomorrow.
Excellent.
At 1 o'clock. So we're doing stuff like that, man. And it's crazy. I don't know how long we're going to be out of business, man. Nobody's making it. I have no income right now, and it's scary. And we're ready to go to work, man. I was talking to the Oak Ridge boys, and they made a great point that everybody's out of business. Bus drivers, bus leasing companies, lighting companies, roadies. Everybody in the music business is out of business. And so it's not good.
No,
and
sir.
I don't know when they're going to let people gather. I mean, golly, we can't keep doing Facebook shows. I mean, you can't make any money doing it. You know, it's fun for the fans and all that, but it's crazy, man. It's scary. I've never been this scared before for my profession. But I think that God's got our back. And I know at the Brown household, we're not worried. We think that the Lord will provide, so we're not worried about it. But it is scary, you know, that golly, man, we're going to be one of the last businesses to be allowed to do our thing.
T, thanks so much for being on our show. It was truly an honor to have you on our program today.
We'll do it, brother. Hey, thanks for having me on your show. God bless you, and God bless all of your listeners. God loves all of y'all, and keep a good thought.
That was T. Graham Brown. We appreciate him being on our country series. We hope that you enjoyed it as well. As we always say, may you live the best version of you. Have a great week. So thanks to our sponsor, Edward Jones. They are our trusted financial advisor. And Edward Jones has been instrumental in helping us pivot our lives built around health, happiness, travel, and adding value to other people's lives. You can contact our advisor, Serban Marasini, by emailing him at serban.marasine@edwardjones.com. And thanks again to their sponsorship of this program. And thanks to our sponsor, Gracefully Yours Greeting Cards, and their hilarious Church Kitchen Lady cards. Church Kitchen Ladies are a bunch of maybe 20 million volunteers across the United States that work in 300,000 churches, and they say stuff like, mind your own biscuits and life will be gravy. They also say, crunch tacos, not abs. And psst, you're crazy is showing, you might want to tuck that back in. And one of our favorites is, life is short, lick the bowl. If you want to find out more about the wonderful Church Kitchen Ladies and join their roundtable, go to gracefully-yours.com today and find out about Church Kitchen Ladies and purchase all the rest of the fine Gracefully Yours greeting cards.